out in the country where a woman's called a gal. She's more than a lover, she's a farmer's best pal. We marry them for life, we marry with a vow. And even in the night we know how to plow. Our children have two parents, our children have a home. They don't grow up with no edible syndrome. We're the backbone of this country, the spirit of its soul. Best you ask for whom the bell tolls. We feed you, we feed you, we feed you.
Hello everybody, this is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 27 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling, What's That Red in Your Eyes? Looking at the opportunities, risks, and pitfalls of Eastern Washington farmers' renewed interest in growing hard red spring wheat. A particularly sought-after version of hard red spring is known as dark northern spring, or DNS, a distinction identified by the grain's darker, deep red kernels. Although the exact premium varies, DNS for July delivery was more than $2.50 per bushel over soft white wheat recently. Eric Meyer, who farms west of Ritzville, is hoping that by going to a DNS rotation, he can kill two birds with one stone, improve his farm's bottom line while he cleans up grassy weeds through other means than herbicide.
We're actually going to try a three-year rotation, so we're going to go winter wheat, DNS, and then a fallow. And we're just going to do that as long as this white wheat market stays depressed. I think we'll probably bounce some things back and forth. We've got a couple of farms where we've gone a winter wheat, DNS, DNS, and then a fallow. What we're trying to do is kind of clean up some ground with that concept, let alone, of course, the higher DNS market. It looks very attractive now. But when we couple into all the things that aren't working for us in terms of a grassy weed herbicide, we're seeing some resistance there on our rye and our cheat to some different chemicals beyond an Olympus. We're seeing some other problems with herbicide resistance as well. We start throwing into the mix, falling numbers usually aren't a problem there. We don't usually have a fungicide we need to put on. I guess at the end of the day, we're cutting out a lot of inputs, so we don't have to look for quite as high a yield as we would have with soft white on a wheat fallow rotation. Again, not for everybody, you know, and it doesn't work on everywhere on our farm. We've got a lot of parcels of land that lay low that have a frost potential. So with that being said, growthy big winter wheat doesn't work there either. We have to seed really late to dodge the frost when we're in bloom. So when we start adding all of those different things together, DNS isn't that bad of an idea to try. Proteins can be a problem, yeah. There's a learning curve there, and a lot of it's just at the whim of Mother Nature, how the heat's going to hit, how the water's going to fall. It's a risk like everything else, but with these small prices for soft white, just had to entertain a couple of different things, and this is one we're going to try.
One of the big inputs for DNS is fertilizer, and you're going to have to put more fertilizer on, but you still feel that you can spend less on inputs using DNS.
I really think so. I really think when you look at our grassy weed herbicide control, that is a large expense item. Fertilizer is still quite a bit cheaper than that, and we tissue test so that we can see when that crop needs nitrogen, when it doesn't. How much nitrogen we're going to have to use as a stressor. And again, what I'm looking for is a yield out of that is a 30, you know, a 28 to 30. I'm happy with that. So I still think when we pencil it all out, we're probably doing okay with this concept. But again, it's not for everybody. It's not for every piece of ground. We decided we had to do something to start cleaning up our ground in terms of more of an integrated pest management approach. We couldn't keep relying on the herbicides year after year after year. We had to do something back to a cultural basis, and that got us back to a spring wheat crop.
Red wheat as a percentage of the state's production has been as low as 7% in 1990 and 1992. Its high came in 2007, just before the run-up in wheat prices, when it stood at 29% of the state's production. Meyer thinks that figure will grow.
I just know in my arena of growers that I talk to, I know 3 out of 5 that are going to pursue this approach for the same reasons I've just mentioned before. I think you'll see it maybe trending upward a little bit until the soft white prices respond or rebound a little bit. But whether that will be a practice that they'll hold for a long period of time, I just don't know. I think it depends on how successful they are with raising DNS and just how well it works for them.
Although spring wheat has the word spring in it, that doesn't necessarily identify when it is planted. A DNS variety from AgriPro, a company owned by Syngenta, is being touted as a fall-planted DNS. Farmers throughout the irrigated Columbia Basin are moving to fall-planted hard red springs whenever they plant wheat, but the concept has moved into the dryland country too. Riley Hilly, AgriPro account leader, said for many farmers in the basin, it's a timing issue as much as it is a pricing issue. The company has two varieties, Basalt and Coho, that are being fall planted.
So with the fall planted, one of the big advantages, a lot of the irrigated guys like to be able to get into the field in the fall. Their machinery isn't getting tied up in the spring trying to get wheat in when they've got other crops that some might say are more important to them than their spring wheat crop. And then it also gives the plant a chance to grow a little bit in the fall, so you get some yield advantage if that variety is strong enough to make it through the winter. So SY Basalt is one that we've had going on a couple years now. It's pretty tried and true and pretty proven down in the Columbia Basin. Up as far as Ritzville, we have some irrigated commercial fields up this way as well. You know, as far as how many guys actually are doing fall planted, I'd say irrigated-wise, it's probably about half the market. I know quite a few guys that do the fall planted. There's a handful of varieties that fit in that. Some of the companies are doing more and more testing on the fall planted DNS just to see if we have up-and-coming lines that would fit into that market as well. So as far as Syngenta is concerned, Basalt has been a tried and true. We have Coho, which is a new line that we're testing. And then we also have a handful of California bred lines that we're bringing up into the area to see if they'll fit as well.
Isn't there a little Russian roulette going on? Because, I mean, you're planting spring varieties in the fall. Spring varieties don't have the winter hardiness of winter varieties.
Yeah, so there is always a little bit of risk there when you plant a spring variety in November, December. I know some guys don't go in until January, February if the ground's good. So you are taking a little bit of a gamble there, maybe more so than you would if you planted in the spring, but you know, it's farming. You always take those gambles to get the biggest yield that you can. And so that's a risk a lot of the guys are willing to take. And quite a few of the varieties, especially the ones that have been around for a couple years, they haven't had issues historically. So you're usually as safe as you can be.
Dana Herron, co-owner of Tri-State Seed in Connell and a member of the Washington Grain Commission, is an advocate of fall planting spring wheat under the right circumstances.
Washington State has so many microclimates that this program, either spring planted DNS or fall planted DNS, will work for some and not others. The balance between test weight and protein is a simple mathematical equation. The wheat plant will put on bushels with adequate nutrition and moisture. It will put on bushels ahead of protein every day. The trick is to have the protein in the soil profile in the right place so that when the plant wants to make protein, it has enough nitrogen to do that. WSU has a number that they tout as 3.5 pounds of nitrogen per expected bushel of DNS yield. My experience tells me that number is closer to 2.8 pounds of N per expected bushel of yield.
But that is based on a specific amount of moisture, correct?
Yep, you're right. So where you fall down, where the grower makes a mistake typically, is when he has more bushels in his field at harvest time than he fertilized for. So if he fertilized for a yield of 80 bushels and all of a sudden there's 105 bushels in the field, guess what? He's going to get more bushels and not make protein. So the trick is to be able to petiole test. You know, plants haven't figured out how to lie yet. They will always tell you how much nitrogen and sulfur and other micronutrients are in their plant. They have to. It's a mathematical equation.
Explain petiole test.
A petiole test is we do a petiole test during the life of the plant twice. Once at flag leaf emergence, Feek scale 10.1, and again at anthesis or bloom. Consequently, we have two shots at adjusting our fertility program. The minimum critical value on nitrogen is 4.0% in the leaf tissue. The minimum critical value on sulfur is 0.35 or above, 0.35% sulfur or above. That ratio is a 14-to-1 ratio. If you are above those critical minimum critical values, you have no worries. You'll make protein. Once again, I need to reiterate, where I get into trouble, or where growers get into trouble, is when they get an extra shot of rain and they have more bushels than they have nitrogen to fix protein. The plant uses nutrition in a very specific way. Understanding how the plant uses nutrition to make protein is fundamental in how to make protein. In parts of this country, it's going to be a difficult program. In other parts of the country, for instance, the irrigated part of the country, where they have an applicator in the middle of the field, being the center pivot, this is an easy thing to do. We raise hardly any soft white winter or soft white spring wheat in any irrigated area in Washington State because the dark northern spring price spread right now is $2 a bushel, and it's easy to make protein. The piece de resistance, so to speak, would be a fall-planted wheat that graded DNS. Syngenta has one now called Basalt. Basalt is a true spring wheat developed in California by RSI for the California market. We tested it for 5 years in Washington State as a fall-planted wheat in the irrigated area and found that it survives our winters very well. I've pushed it this year as far north as Interstate 90 at Ritzville, just east of Ritzville, and survived very well. Field looks beautiful. And so now what a grower needs to figure out how to do, and our breeders need to figure out how to deliver this product, is a fall-planted DNS with enough winter hardiness to survive the winter.
And this isn't going to create any grading problems. Figus isn't going to come back to you and say, hey, it's planted in the fall, therefore it's a fall wheat.
They may try, but if it grades DNS, it'll be a DNS. It's a phenotypic description, not a planting date determination.
Glenn Squires, CEO of the Washington Grain Commission, has been watching the fortunes of hard red wheat through more than 20 years on the job. During that time, quality, yield, and protein have all improved, and breeders have been at the heart of the transformation.
I think public breeders and private breeders, they've recognized that we need to make sure that we have good quality. And the Hard Red Spring program, Dr. Pumphrey's program, you know, all the varieties that are being released, they're basically way up there in quality. And I think there's just a lot of good germplasm, and there's been a lot of emphasis on having high quality red wheats, and it shows, because you look at the quality data, we have just as good a quality in our red wheats as Montana and North Dakota and Kansas. I think it's just a real tribute to the breeders and how focused they've been on maintaining the quality of the varieties and throwing out the stuff that doesn't have quality.
Mike Pumphrey, Washington State University spring wheat breeder, speaking at the Lynn Field Day, said there's a lot of good hard red spring wheat varieties available, and not just from his program. He wouldn't give a recommendation about whether farmers should try hard red spring, but he certainly gave people something to think about.
Farmers are much better than I am at figuring out their bottom line, figuring out their input costs, and deciding. I will say, in, you know, long-term trials, I don't stick like the Chet in the soft white trial where it would give us a truly sort of head-for-head comparison, but like at Lind here, these trials are side-by-side every year. The hard reds are always a little bit lower, and that is the trade-off between protein and starch and endosperm in yield. But in these areas, I don't see that much of a discrimination. So the five-year average for Diva at Lind is about 28 bushels per acre. Five-year average for Chet at Lind is 26 bushels per acre, so there is a two-bushel difference. The protein for Chet is quite high. The five-year average for Chet would be about 15.8 at this location. Diva would be down around 12.5 or something like that. It's still high for a soft white, but making protein with not just Chet, but a lot of the new Westbred Syngenta varieties, there's some really good high-protein spring wheats. $2, you can do the math there on your fertilizer cost and a $2 bushel difference and decide, you know, what makes the most sense.
Whether hard red spring wheat fits a particular rotation depends not just on a farm's agronomics, but on the level of risk a farmer wants to take. Soft white wheat is like a trusted friend. Hard red spring is the tempting new kid in town. Ron Giray, who farms not far from Eric Meyer outside Ritzville, is someone who has tried hard red spring in the past And while he isn't ruling out trying it again, he isn't exactly biting at the bit either.
My experience, and it's been 5, 6, maybe even a few more than that years now, but my experience in the past was in my area where I'm annual cropping it, that if I had good moisture and I had a good yield and nice plump kernels and test weight, I didn't make protein. On the flip side, if I made protein, I didn't have test weight. And the penalties for either one of those is such that it's like, is it really worth it? Especially when you're putting in the added nitrogen and everything else that you're trying, you know, and making the effort to try and make protein. And so it just became a whole lot simpler and financially more sound to just do continuous soft white. I do know that I was consistently seeing 56, 57, as low as 55 on test weight when I was making protein.
I asked Jeray if he had any advice for farmers looking to get into growing hard red spring wheat.
I wish them the best. I mean, I just know my own experience that I had. And, you know, it, would we take and say, okay, well, maybe we will do part of the farm doing that? I mean, we may look at that again. But I just, my back, my past experience, I wouldn't jump in with both feet, that's for sure.
So what's the takeaway on hard red spring wheat? I think it boils down to something like this. It's a no-brainer for irrigators who can control their nitrogen applications. For dryland guys, Mother Nature is in the driver's seat. When it works, it works. And when it doesn't, it's enough to make a person think twice about trying it again. Then again, more high-yielding, high-protein, and high-quality hard red spring varieties are around now than there were the last time farmers made a run for the red. I agree with Jeray that it makes sense not to jump in with both feet, but certainly dipping your toe in by putting in a field of hard red spring wouldn't be a bad idea. It's always important to pencil things out, but you can't blame farmers for chasing the gold. At various field days this spring, I've talked with a few of them about prices, and it's clear that $4.25 per bushel soft white is not paying all the bills. Those who aren't already thinking of turning in the keys are looking for every opportunity to eke out a profit they'll need to stay in business until weather or politics drives prices higher in the future. Good luck! That's it for episode 27 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling, What's That Red in Your Eyes? Thanks for joining me, and I hope you'll tune in again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.